Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm joined for the fourth time by the one and only Luke Fox of Sportsnet. I hope you had a good summer. In Leafs land, it must be always a crazy year. So, do you feel ready for a new season, Luke?
Yeah, absolutely. I think just the last week or so, it's starting to set in, back to school. My editors started bugging me. I've got a few trips in the books in terms of flights and hotels, so it's starting to sink in. It was a nice relaxing summer. Another long summer for Leaf fans, but yeah, ready to go. We got the itch again.
Was did you feel as though the captaincy change from John Tavares to Austin Matthews was your hey Luke, it's almost the end of summer, it's time to get back on track? Or what was kind of that like to see that in the middle of the dog days of August?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was kind of refreshing to actually have some news. Sometimes you get invited on radio shows and you're just talking about the same topics, even though there's nothing of substance. So for the Leafs to make news in August, that was kind of fun. And then the fact that it was an in-person availability, this passing of the torch, pretty rare. Not for a guy to lose his captaincy, but to hang on afterwards and be on board with it. So it's good to see some players, some management, the other reporters, of course. But you think back to the last time this happened to a Canadian team, and it wasn't this type of feeling at all, right? Blake Wheeler getting stripped, kind of signaled his end in Winnipeg. So John Tavares, I what struck me, I mean, it was a day for Austin Matthews, but what almost struck me more was John Tavares's class in handling the whole thing. He brought his three kids, his sons were wearing Matthews sweaters with the C on it. Even his parents were there. It was just like, symbolic, but it was a real show of solidarity. Like, okay, yeah, maybe deep down, I don't love the fact that I'm not captain anymore because I was proud of it, but I realize that this is Austin's team now, and I'm going to be fully on board publicly and show my support. And not that surprising because John's all class, but I think it took a lot for him to be up there on stage and having to make a speech and have his family there to celebrate a teammate. I thought it was a real strong showing by him.
Why do you think it was now for the Leafs to make that change? Why not maybe wait, until the end of the season when John Tavares would be out of a contract? Why not 2, 3 years ago when it was clear Austin Matthews was the face of the franchise? Like, just maybe why now do you think it was for Brad Treliving, Brendan Shanahan to make the move?
Yeah, the timing was a little bit interesting. I feel like so this is the year that Austin's new contract kicks in. For 1 year, he'll be the highest paid guy in the NHL now that we learn that Leon Draisaitl is coming in at 14. But I think it became evident to everyone that this was Matthews' team now. And that's no slight on Tavares' career or how he handled himself a captain, but I think his Matthews voice carries a little farther. I think his teammates are gravitated towards him. I think just naturally, he's become the man. I mean, this is a guy that flirted with 70 goals. He's got a Hart Trophy. Like he's accomplished some things that at his young age that Tavares hasn't. And it just felt right. It felt like he's the guy. Everyone kind of knows it. He might as well wear the C. Secondarily, the conspiracy theorists would be too strong, but the more critically minded part of me is like, well, they didn't make any real changes to the core again. So here's a way to show that this is a new era, right? It's a little bit, yeah, we'll rearrange the letters a bit to try and resell the same thing. Now, what I'm curious is if Matthews actually feels really emboldened by this. Is he the same old Matthews? Which there's nothing wrong with that. Or does he actually speak up a little bit more often behind closed doors? Does he challenge the guys a little bit more? Because I think he has another level in there to get to in terms of leadership.
And with that, like, do you think that there is a huge difference between, you wrote in one of your stories that there isn't really a huge discrepancy now between having a C and not, and doesn't mean as much as it maybe used to in the NHL, but Does it just give him that credence? Do you think it'll make a big difference? Or, I mean, obviously we won't know until, the end of the net, the playoffs next year, but how can that maybe giving the C really dramatically change him, the team that, as you said, has been the same? It's they're running it back, which I know you love. Why will it make a difference? Why potentially won't it make a difference?
I mean, use the word dramatically, and I wouldn't go that far. Like, I don't think it's going to be a dramatic difference. I do think it's mostly symbolic, but I am hopeful, and if I was Leafs management or a member of the team, I'd be hopeful that maybe Matthews just calls guys out, holds guys to account a little bit more. In the past, he's been a kind of like John, but maybe in a different way, different personality. But he's mostly been a lead by example type. He's got strong work ethic. He'll stick around after practice and work on his one timer forever. He trains really hard in the summer. Like, this is no accident. Yeah, he has some natural skill, but this guy's a hard worker. He leads by example in terms of not sacrificing offense for defense. He's was a Selke finalist. He takes care of business on his own, and he back checks hard. Like, he does a lot of those things. So I just think what could change is maybe him being a bit more vocal. Does he go up to the third line D pair guy who's having a rough go and talk to him and try to get him going a little bit more? Does he feel like, okay, I got to take ownership of the whole room, not just my own stat line, not just my own line? Does he take charge even more? And as the highest paid guy in the league, as a leader of the team that hasn't accomplished what many thought or hoped they would be able to accomplish, you hope he feels a little bit of that pressure onus to do that.
The thing that keeps coming into my mind that feels like ages ago, but really was only a couple months ago, was when Marner and Nylander were bickering on the bench, and Matthews is right there. Like, do you think that, like, those are the kind of moments that maybe he intervenes, puts the two players in check, like, especially the, two of the other stars on the team? Is it those kind of little moments where
Sure.
you might raise his voice and maybe not just lead by example?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a great example. I'd like to see him take charge. I remember, and because it's happened so infrequently, you remember it. And I remember one time Justin Hall had just a horrible giveaway or really bad shift. This was going back a couple of years ago, and there was, it was caught on the bench, Austin calling him out and getting him to smarten up. And I don't think you have to be like that all 82 games. But I think there's some times where this team goes through lulls and they're not playing up to their capabilities, and you'd like that accountability to come from the guys with the letters before it has to come from the head coach.
Maybe my worry is, I think it was Ryan O'Reilly. I'm not the Leafs expert, but you are. But someone, a former player who had played in the room, had called it a quiet room, and I wonder if that is something that changes, or maybe is it just the same? Like I that this core has been together, as you said, for so long, struggled each time, and he has never really lived up to maybe as good as he has in the regular season in the playoffs. I think this year was maybe a bit muddied because he was injured, but it's gonna be interesting to see where, like, why would it change? I think that's what I keep thinking. Like, why does a C, why does, adding more leadership really change anything on the ice for this team that struggled at each hump over the
Well,
years?
it might not, and I think there's a realization that it hasn't changed and that it is a quiet room, which is why management brings in guys from the outside to try and remedy that. So some of that growth you want to happen internally from the guys that have been there for whatever, 8 years now or whatever it is. But some of it is, let's bring in a Chris Tanev. Like, I think Tanev is a guy that brings guys together that is a little bit more vocal. They tried with Ryan Reeves. And the problem is, you got those guys have to feel like they're playing an important role. Reeves himself admitted, he was healthy scratch for a bunch of games. It's like, maybe I'm not the guy to speak up because I'm not even on the ice. Or when I am on the ice, I'm on 8 minutes. So he's doing the best he can, but you want that to come from your top guys. And I think all of a sudden, Tanev is one of the top guys. So maybe you're expecting a little bit from him. That's a more significant change, I would think, is adding a guy like that than changing the letters around.
I guess with that, it's a perfect segue to Brad Treliving's off season and bringing in a guy like Tanev, Ekman-Larsson, other players. Obviously, they lost Bertuzzi as well. Re-signing some guys, like Max Domi, Liljegren. How would you maybe assess now that it's been a couple months the off season for the Leafs? Do you think they're a markedly better team than they were at the end of the playoffs last year?
No, I think it's about the same. I mean, not markedly worse either. I think their forward group has taken a hit because Bertuzzi really came on the second half of the season, and I thought he was good in the Boston series after having disastrous, might be too strong a word, but not that strong.
Far
Like his first half was not good, right? He couldn't find the back of the net if you gave him a map. So losing him and not really replacing him hurts the forward group. I question their forward depth. Now they're banking on Matthew Knies as a sophomore to take a giant step. They're hoping to get a healthy Bobby McMahon that should play some inspired hockey. Once again, they're banking on like career years or something close to it from their big guys. So there's a little bit of hope there up front. And I feel like it's something they'll probably have to address at least by the trade deadline. The blue line, I do think, is as good as it was in the playoffs. I think adding Tanev and Ekman-Larsson are good bets, especially for the now. The term they gave them, that might bite them down the road, but in terms of 24, 25, I think it's a stronger, more balanced group. You'd think Benoit is only going to get better. McCabe had the best year of his life. Maybe he's going into a contract year. Maybe he can take another step. Riley, at this point, maybe he stays around the same. So I think the blue line's better, and there's a lot of crossing your fingers in the crease. I love Joseph Woll when he's healthy. He's never had a fully healthy pro season. He just doesn't have the experience. So you're hoping on his health, and you're hoping Anthony Stolarz is something better than a number two. Is he a 1B? Is he a guy, who can challenge to be a 1A? Talking to him, he's confident. He feels like he just hasn't been given a shot. And surely he looked at Toronto and said, okay, I'm going to have a bunch of goals going in on the other end. So I'm going to have a little padding that way. And then the guy playing in front of me is pretty young and pretty injury prone, so maybe I can steal this net. I think he's coming in not thinking I'm content to be number two like I was with Bobrovsky. I want to take some starts from Joseph Woll. So the crease is a big question mark for me. Maybe one of these guys steps up. Maybe they both do, and they surprise us. But overall, I think they're roughly about the same. They should be a playoff team. They should avoid the wild card. Can they contend for that number one seed, and get themselves an easier first round opponent? That would go a long way.
I guess with that, circling back because as much as Treliving's did a lot of work during the offseason, it still feels like the biggest elephant in the room is the Mitch Marner situation. And I guess with you, what's your gut going into, training camp starting a week or two from now with him? Do you think he's going to sign an extension? Do you think they're going to go into the season with it, kind of like with Nylander, who signed a deal midway through? Will it just be, no negotiations, walk straight to free agency? And what do you think the Leafs will do with that as well? Just with, is it the right move to for Treliving and Co. to, or I guess Shanahan and Co. at the same time to walk them maybe to free agency?
Yeah, well, that's what they're looking at. And the organization, this happened before Treliving, but the organization gave this guy a full no move clause. So that's the kind of pickle you put yourself in. And that's no offense to Marner. I mean, he negotiated that fair and square. Good on the player. Players should get as much as they can. I don't see them coming to an extension the way Nylander did, because I just feel like it wouldn't go over very well before in season, before there's anything different in the playoffs. We all know Marner is an elite regular season player. He can put up 100 points if he stays healthy and puts his mind to it. I have no doubt. I mean, this is a great talent, and Draisaitl just raised the bar. Like, I don't think he's taking a penny less than Nylander, and I don't think the Leafs are willing to pay him that right now until they see something different come postseason time. So I do believe that Trey Living at least explored options in terms of moving on from him. But if Marner wants to stay, he stays. And I understand from his point of view why he'd want to. He gets to play setup man to the most dangerous goal scorer in the sport. And you're going into a contract here where you're trying to make as much money as possible. So I think this just plays out. I don't think their management is all that eager to sign him to $12.5 million or $12 million, give him a raise when the team hasn't had playoff success. I think that would go over like an anvil with the fan base right now if he signed before camp. And I don't see Marner suddenly saying, sure, I'll go play in Chicago or Utah or something like Columbus. Like, I don't think he wants to move. So I think they just play this out. And maybe that means playing it all the way through to the end of the playoffs, seeing how the team does, seeing how Marner performs under Berube. Can a coach really make a difference? We'll see. And then taking it from there. But you're right, it's dangerous, right? You could be walking a guy out the door when he's one of the best wingers in the sport.
I guess we're what's the like who I'm trying to think of, then there's so many different outcomes or possibilities with the situation, but I can't think of one that makes a ton of sense for the Leafs and Marner unless they go on a deep playoff run, which still feels a bit like, I don't know, this team has never done it. Their division is, I think, as you've said before, like one of the probably the best division in hockey, no real bad teams in it. Hopefully it's not the Senators for my sake, covering them here. But I just like, where's the outcome where both of these, two sides kiss and make up and decide to stay together long term?
The only way I see that happening is if they go on a deep run. And it's sports. Crazy things happen. Maybe this is the year they push through. Am I a believer that that's going to happen? No. Just because there's enough evidence that I feel something fundamentally has to change to the core. And it's not a slight on Marner. It's not pinning. Some people, want to pile on, or they've mistaken the criticism for piling on a single player. My criticism would have to do with roster construction and the idea of placing such a large percentage of your cap dollars into five players. Because I'm going to include Morgan Rielly, whose primary attribute is offense. And the great irony here is in the last few postseasons, the team can't score. They've actually buckled down and played pretty good defense. They've got passable goaltending. Definitely in a lot of those series, they had the second best goaltending, but they had decent enough goaltending. It's not like, oh, if only our guy could make some saves. It wasn't just on the goaltending. A lot of the problem is they can't score. And part of that is health. So you bet, put all your tens of millions into a few guys. Chances are one's going to get banged up. In the Boston series, Austin and William both had issues, right? Tavares had issues in the Montreal series a while back. So you're banking on them to be healthy, and you're banking on them to be amazing, to carry you, because you haven't left enough dollars over to get great complementary players like a Killorn or a Yanni Gourde or William Karlsson on your third line. Like, you're too thin. You're too thin. You're putting too much on too many guys. So if they're not amazing and they're not healthy, it's hard to win two rounds, let alone four.
And I guess with that, like if he does stay, or if they find an extension, what where do you see things at, or where things are at with John Tavares, who did cede the captaincy? That seems like a move. Maybe he's also in a contract year. Do you think there could be an extension, before training camp or before the season, throughout, like maybe in a similar vein? Where do you th see things are at with Tavares and the Leafs right now?
Yeah, I think it's much more likely that he re-signs at this stage than Marner does. I do think it's possible. And I do think his willingness to take one for the team and, be okay with the captaincy. I mean, it wasn't his idea, let's be clear.
Yes.
But he came around to the idea and publicly was fully on board. So I think that went a long way to him staying. I think he really wants to stay, maybe even more than Marner wants to stay. So he's got three young kids. He's got the support of all the grandparents. He's from here. So is Marner, but he's from here. He chose here, right, as a free agent. It was a big deal to him. And I'm sure on that day, he thought, this is my last stop. And he wants to win so badly. This is a guy who's top 100 in all-time NHL points. And he's only been to the second round twice in his life. Like, he wants to win. He's fine financially. So I think he'll be willing to take a haircut. I'm not saying he's taking 800,000, but he'll take a haircut if it means staying on. And if you look at the team center depth, I think there is a role for Tavares beyond this season, just because he's so valuable, because he can play center. And maybe he grows into a third line center role. There's room on the left wing. Maybe he phases into life as a winger and a power play specialist, a la Steven Stamkos. There is a future for him here if he takes less money. And I think that's a very believable thing to have happen. And I think it's a little bit independent of the Marner situation. I think they're two separate situations.
With that, do you think his contract maybe looks a little bit like a Steven Stamkos contract, where it's like in that $7-8 million range for 4 or 5 years, or where do you?
I don't think it's that high.
No.
Well, Stamkos is coming off, did we
40
get
goals.
over 40 goals?
Yeah.
He was I watched that Tampa Florida series. I thought he was the best player in a Lightning sweater in that whole series, despite his age. And he has rings. So I don't think he can ask for quite as much as Stamkos. But yeah, I think he would take less of a cap hit if it meant more years. And I don't think he's afraid to spread it out.
I guess with that, you mentioned kind of coaching and how much impact that might have or might not have on this core. You said some interesting things about Berube and maybe his style in terms of maybe being more egalitarian, the willingness to bench a guy like Ryan O'Reilly in 2019 when then he won the Conn Smythe during that run. How big of a difference do you think you'll see on the ice with this team with the Craig Berube at the helm compared to Sheldon Keefe of years prior?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic question. I think it's probably the most important question or the biggest source of curiosity heading into the early part of the season. How different are they really going to look under the coach? How much difference can a guy like that make? So Berube and I had the privilege of covering the 19 Blues, covering that final, and he loved rolling four lines. The catch is that team was built to roll four lines. This team's built a little bit different. So I think that's where the fascination comes. Is he going to spread out the superstars across the top nine a little bit more? Sheldon Keefe did it at times, but then he'd all often go back and just load up the top six. Is he going to stick with spreading the minutes out? Is he going to get more out of a Bobby McMahon, a Connor Dewar, whoever? Those guys, like a Yarncroke. Can Yarncroke get a few more minutes? Like Max Domi, how does he use Domi? So is he going to make it feel like there's less of a separation between, Team A, who makes all the money and has all the security, and Team B, who forever feels like they're fighting for minutes and fighting for ice time? Is it more cohesive? And I think that, that's how he's kind of positioned, is how he likes to run his bench. But can you really do it when there's a drop off in talent from your Marners, Nylanders, and Matthews, Tavares to the other guys? Does he try to create two power play units? This is a chance for him to take this roster and kind of look at it as a blank canvas and throw out some of Keefe's ideas and try some new stuff. Everyone says this team's going to be judged by what happens in the playoffs. Why not use the regular season to really try some adventurous things? See if something else works. See if you can get more out of guys, because it's all a dress rehearsal anyway.
I guess with that, my next question is, I during the Babcock years, there's the famous time where he benched Mitch Marner, a young Mitch Marner, to the fourth line. Like, I don't think we're going to see that, but is that something where maybe people kind of want a hard ass and then they see the hard ass benching their best players and then get it, like just as the fan base, like how do you think they'll react to maybe a bit more of, I don't know if tough love is the right word, but maybe that kind of being harsher on the star players that I think Keefe and even Babcock in some ways weren't as much.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're the coach, you got to not care what the fan base thinks. And I think Keith was guilty of maybe paying attention to some of the narrative around the team. You're not going to keep everyone happy. You know, if you give Mitch Marner 22 minutes, there's going to be people that say that's too much, and there's going to be people that say that's not enough. He's the engine of the team. He plays in all situations. He can do it all. Why aren't you playing him 23? You're never going to make everyone happy. What will make everyone happy is if you build a winner, and not a regular season winner, a winner in the playoffs. So I think he gets that. How he goes about it is going to be fascinating, because there is going to be way more scrutiny on how he deals with William Nylander than how he dealt with Jordan Kyrou. You know, that might be a story for a day. Something like that would be a story for a week or a month in
Months.
Toronto. So I don't think he really cares about the media stuff. I think he's a straight shooter and wants to win. But how does that play out? I'm fascinated to see.
You think that might be something interesting with the core four, core five, or just but really the trio of Marner, Nylander, and Matthews, who have really been given everything, the money, the fame, and really have wilted under the pressure that maybe getting a bit more of a kick up the ass might change things, like, or do you think that was
Well,
what the team needed for
that's the
years?
hope. That's the hope. I think it was overdue, and that's not a slight to Sheldon Keefe, but I do think something needed to change. You need a different voice. I do think those guys were pretty comfortable. You know, they wanted Babcock out. They got their coach fired and got a new guy who came in with less security and power, I'd argue, than a lot of the players. Like, the players had more power than the coach. And ultimately, who paid for the playoff failures? The coach. So they proved that power by staying on. They got their raises. They're good. So I do think a guy like Berube comes in with a ring. I do think that matters. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to win another ring, but I think it matters when a guy has already led a group of NHLers to a championship versus a guy who led a group of AHLers to a championship. I do think that carries weight with the player. So, and he's also the kind of guy where just the way he carries himself, I would be shocked if he walked back any of his comments or softened his criticism the next day when the microphones and the cameras appear. So, I do think he's a bit no nonsense like that. But I've also heard from talking to players who've played from him before that that doesn't mean he's a strictly a hard ass. Like, apparently he has a good sense of humor. He gets along with most of his players. He doesn't act like I'm here, I'm the dictator. He actually wants to build relationships with guys. I just think he's a little bit more straightforward and a little bit more decisive.
How do you think that will interact with maybe, as you mentioned before, just the depth of this team? It's a lot of younger players that, aren't, he's not going into a room, especially with the forward group, that with a bunch of guys that have played 8, 9, 10 years in the league. And that's really what they're going to be trying to get out is with the Holmbergs, the if Minn, maybe even Easton Cowan, like other players, Connor Dewar's kind of youngish. Like, how do you think that might interact with the young players? And maybe what do you think those expectations should be for those guys that have kind of been in, the depths or in the AHL that will need to step up for this team this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to have to earn their ice time. They're going to have to earn a guy like Berube's respect. I don't think much is going to be given to those guys. You know, I think it's my understanding that the organization would rather Fraser Minton play a full year with the Marlies and develop. He's not coming off the greatest season in junior. I think this guy will be an NHLer, probably in 3C. You know, it would be great if he turned into a 2C. I really like this kid, but I do think he needs time to grow. So in a perfect world, I think he'll want to see those guys earn their ice time as opposed to giving them anything. But, you know, maybe he learned a little bit from when things started to go south in St. Louis and how to work with the younger player a little bit better as opposed to being so hard on him. It's a fine line. And it's a really interesting mix the Leafs have now, because you point out some of the younger guys, but they also got some old guys. Like their core has been around a while. You got Yarncroc, Kampf, Reeves. You got a lot of forwards that have been there a while. So they know the drill. And I don't know. It's kind of a funny mix in terms of ages with Toronto right now. And it'll be interesting to see how Berube handles the different personalities and the gaps in age there.
Do you think maybe the point of, if you can maybe buy high or feel more confident in this roster is like feels like every year for the past 3, 4 years because of all the expensive contracts with their top guys that they'll add at the deadline and now they have a couple more picks. This team feels maybe a bit more complete than it did at least last year heading into the year, and that they can add, a third line center, another top four defenseman. And that really completes and shapes and molds this team into maybe I don't want to say a Stanley Cup contender, but maybe a team that can go to the second or even third round of the playoffs.
Yeah, sure. And they would Brett Treliving made a point of getting a second rounder. He didn't have one, a 25 second rounder, but he traded to get one at the draft. And it's my belief that he did that because a lot of key rentals at the 24 deadline went for second rounders, and he couldn't even get in those conversations because he didn't have one. So it was either his first or one of his prize prospects, like a Cowan that he or Minton that he had no interest in giving up on so early, but then he had nothing left, so he went out and got a second. I would be shocked if he hung on to that one. So we'll see. We'll see. We got to watch a couple of months of hockey to see what they really need. A third line center, they probably need one. First or second line left winger, they probably need one of those too. Maybe there's an injury on defense and that becomes the priority. So we'll see. But there's enough holes there that I'm sure he's going to spend that. You have to go for it when these guys are in their prime.
Any update on Robertson and just where that kind of is at? And I don't really have any question, but just your thoughts on that whole situation.
Well, it's my understanding that, he hasn't rescinded his trade request or expressed a desire to sign his qualifying offer. I don't know how deep Treliving's gone in terms of offering him much security. So I think either he's going to sign a bridge deal, either a trade pops up. But to my mind, it's like if a trade that Treliving likes hasn't arisen now, why will it arise in the next 2 weeks before camp opens? Really, to me, the pressure is on the player more than the team. Treliving went out and re-signed some guys who can play the wing. He went out and got Alex Nylander, which is an interesting one. Now, he's only on a Marlies deal, but he has NHL experience, and that could put some pressure. Hey, we have guys willing to take your minutes, Nick, if you want to not put pen to paper. I actually think it hurts Robertson more than it does the team if he decides not to report to camp. This is a guy who's been injured a lot, had to play through COVID, struggled to in and out of the lineup with healthy scratches. He needs reps. I really like his talent. I really like his work ethic. I like his attitude. But this guy needs to play hockey. So if he doesn't want to be a Leaf or he doesn't see a future with himself as a Leaf, I think he might need to play his way out of this situation. Up your trade value by playing well. Then you make yourself more easy to trade, or maybe under a new coach, you win Berube over, and somehow you have a spot because with Bertuzzi gone, the opening on the left side has never been more open than it is now.
Just maybe, we've kind of touched upon it a little bit, but with this team, like, does it feel for you that their window to compete for a Stanley Cup has closed? Do you think there's a possibility that it can open once again? Or is this really, I think maybe in many ways my question is this the litmus year of where like the 55 possible directions this team can go in where they do well in the playoffs, do poor, Marner, Tavares, cap space, everything. Like, does this feel like this is the year where it's not make or break because they've always run it back, but that it leads to actually real movement for this core and this team?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like every year we like, especially here, we like to position it as this is the really important year. Something's got to change, or this will tell us what they're made of, or we got big decisions. There's always an angle to go and drag you that in that direction. What I would say is this year is unique because of the Marner situation, and to a lesser extent, Tavares. And I think whether they re-sign Marner and run it all back again would be really fascinating. And it might be a little boring, to be honest, especially if they don't do well in the playoffs. Or all of a sudden you have $11 million in cap space that you could go fill. And you're probably not filling it with one player, you're probably filling it with two or three. And that would drastically change the complexion of the team. I'm not willing to shut their window of contention closed. Austin's signed for 4 more years, one of the best players in hockey, puts the puck in the net like no one I've ever seen live. So, and that includes Alex Ovechkin. So, I think you always have an opportunity to contend when you have a guy like that as your number one center. It's can you fill in the pieces around it? And I think Marner's going to be a big storyline because if it's not him, then you're getting a new supporting cast.
Before I let you go, I just kind of want to ask a question. I mean, we never know with these things, but right now, as we sit here today in early September, which team is the best team in Canada in your mind?
Oh, Edmonton. I mean, I watched them come within a couple goals of winning the cup. They just re-signed Draisaitl. I like what they did in free agency. Yeah, Doug Armstrong's double offer sheet hurt their depth for sure. But a lot of the guys, like a guy like Connor Brown, taking a little bit less just to stay. I like the idea of bringing back the majority of the core. Yeah, it's the Oilers. It's the Oilers for sure.
Who's better, Draisaitl or Matthews? No, I'm kidding. I'm not gonna make you answer that, especially as a Leafs reporter. But Luke, I agree with the Oilers pick. I hope the Sens can just be watchable and get at
The
least.
bar's changed, hey, it's down to watchable.
I think there's been too many summers of hope, and we need summer of realism. So I think the Sens fan base is there. I think for the most part, they're not too high. I hope.
At least you have company because Detroit and Buffalo are feeling the same thing as you guys in Ottawa.
I feel bad. I feel worse for Buffalo. That fan base. And they were right there too. They were right there. Anything kind of you kind of mentioned and alluded to it, Luke. Anything in the hopper for Sportsnet for that people should kind of keep their eyes and ears open for, that you want to plug?
Well, I'm gonna be all over Leafs training camp. Cooking up a story on the 25 people that will define the 24-25 season as a bit of a longer read for the season preview. And I don't know. I'm back at work. I'll be posting lots of stuff.
Awesome. I hope Linus Allmark is somewhere in that piece, because I think he'd be
He is. He is. You're yeah,
one
he
step ahead,
is.
one step ahead.
Yeah.
I just so the listeners know, we did not talk about this ahead of time,
No.
so I got it. But thanks so much, Luke, for taking the time to come on this little podcast. We really appreciate it, and good luck with the Leafs here. And I just hope for your sake they don't lose to Boston in Game 7. That's I just so you have a little bit of a different narrative and story to write about. Maybe double overtime. Maybe that will be even harder. But thanks so much for taking the time and doing this.
All right, awesome. Thanks for having me, Alex.